weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Two Giants and Afric. It's Friday the 15th of March and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, Ruby closes out our Cheltenham coverage with his take on the festival finale. We'll also preview the sporting weekend ahead with Paul Corrie, Fergal Brennan, Brendan Devaney and Shane McGrath. And we'll hear from Ireland captain Peter Omani with Six Nations success on offer in the Aviva tomorrow. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM. Or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. We are starting Friday with a competition because this week on Game On, we've an incredible prize from AXA to give away. So you and three of your friends could win a trip to Liverpool or to see Liverpool FC women's team take on Chelsea at Prenton Park. It's all part of AXA's Being a Woman Shouldn't Be a Risk campaign. And across 2FM this week, we've been featuring stories of women who've turned challenges into triumphs. And thanks to AXA, you could win 4 hospitality match tickets to see Liverpool FC at Prenton Park against Chelsea on Sunday the 28th of April plus €2,000 to cover your flights and hotel. So for a chance to get your name into today's draw for this amazing prize, just answer the following question. Chelsea versus Arsenal is a huge game tonight in the Women's Super League title race. Who is the manager of Chelsea Women? So text the word AXA, your name, your answer and email address to 51552, and later on we'll pick one person randomly and their name will go into today's draw along with the rest of our 4 names from during the week. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all details. Paul Corrie is with me in studio. How are you, Paul?
I'm very good. Prenton Park, I was in Lona Tranmere.
Oh yeah, go on, yeah. What's it like?
Lovely stadium, pitch was like a beach when I was there, but it seems to have improved a lot. I think Liverpool have partnered up with Tranmere a bit in order to improve the facility for the women's team, so yeah.
There's a bit of talk that they might be looking at other options as well, so we'll see how that plays out over the next while. So have you been glued to Cheltenham like many other people in this country?
Well, I was away, I was in the Middle East, but I was tuning in, I was watching bits of Ruby's coverage. Ruby's coverage is fantastic.
Yeah.
It really breaks it down into simple terms for people like me who have absolutely no idea about horse racing.
He picks out little things, doesn't he, that
yeah.
we don't see as just normal human beings who watch racing once a year.
Yeah, it's very hard, isn't it, like to the naked eye to actually analyse and break it down and see where maybe races were won and lost. And I think Ruby does that so well, and his use of language to bring it back to simple terms.
Yeah, and he knows his audience. Like, he knows that it's like it's a mass audience. It's not the usual people who go to racing week in, week out. It's much broader. On
his wardrobe is decent as well.
Yeah, he's looking well. In fairness, we don't get to see him because he's usually on radio. We'll be hearing from Ruby in just a while. It is a mad weekend of sport. Like, it is so busy this weekend, and I know I feel like we say that every weekend, but particularly I guess with Cheltenham coming to an end and we're heading into the end of the Six Nations, there's loads of Gaelic games, there's FA Cup, so much going on, Paul.
Yeah, League of Ireland
tonight,
and we are really cracking into kind of the business end of the football season as well, the Champions League draw that was made today, and you can start to maybe pave out the fixtures that the teams at the top end of the Premier League are going to have to play, the juggling of squads. Yeah, it feels like things are really taking off in the Irish League of Ireland season as well, and tonight is obviously a big game for Shamrock Rovers heading down to Galway. But yeah, everywhere you look, even watching the darts last night, I thought it was brilliant. Luke Littler, Cheltenham and everything, just so much going on, isn't there, where you have to be spread so well across all the sports. Really looking forward to what will be a great weekend of sport.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to start with the rugby now. Of course, Ireland have that huge Six Nations game against Scotland tomorrow, and it's no surprise that captain Peter Omani has set his sights on getting the win, but he says that the senior players are aware of the permutations that would clinch the Guinness Six Nations title. So let's hear from Peter Omani, the Ireland captain, who was speaking to Michael Corcoran today.
Peter, it's been a bit of a roller coaster of a week considering last week and what's had to, you've had to go through this week. It must be almost a relief there's a match tomorrow.
Yeah, certainly. Looking forward to get stuck into it, as you said, inside. Glad there wasn't a week off, a down week, or that was the end of it. It's nice to be able to get back up on the horse and have an opportunity to leave the Irish jersey in a good place after.
How important has the mental challenge been this week to get you to where you need to be tomorrow?
It's been huge, yeah. Look, we've been obviously a big review job and, a couple of honest conversations that our performance wasn't good enough and we weren't happy with it. And, plenty of work to do to to sort and tweak a few bits to, you know, put in a, you know, hopefully a great performance tomorrow.
Is discipline something that you've spoken about as a collective during the course of the week? I mean, in a situation last year where you were not penalised very often to being, I think, probably the most penalised team in the competition this year so far.
Yeah, look, it's been a topic for the last few weeks, and you know, spoke about it again this week, and look, we know that nobody is certainly committing penalties on purpose, but we just got to be a bit cleverer about some of our play and some of the balls we compete for, etc., and give teams less access into our 22, because you know, teams at this level are very clinical when they do get down there.
And Scotland losing last week, does that make them even more dangerous tomorrow?
I think it does, but you know, we're in the same boat. It certainly sharpens the focus for you when you do have a loss like that, for, you know, two teams who don't lose that often. So we're both in the same boat in that regard.
And the reality, though, is if at the start of the season I said to you you'd be involved the last game of the season with a chance of winning the Six Nations, you'd have snapped my hand off.
Of course it is. That's what we're all here for. You know what I mean? We want to win the championship. I'd have taken your hand off. That's what we're all here to do.
And it's important, just from your own point of view, from a group point of view, that you put in the performance that didn't happen last week. It's almost as if you owe yourself something tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, as I say, always, you have a huge responsibility playing in an Irish jersey, and we have an opportunity to put in a better place than we did last week. And you know, as a result, it needs a big step up in performance, but big responsibility on the 15 and 23 tomorrow to do that.
Yeah, exciting times ahead on the rugby front. And if you want to tune into that, do listen to Saturday Sport tomorrow. We're going to turn our attention to racing now. And before we chat to Ruby, let's hear how Galpin Deschamps won the Cheltenham Gold Cup for Willie Mullins under Paul Townend today.
But Galpin Deschamps has struck for home again at Cheltenham, and a massive jump over the last. He leads by four lengths to Jury Colombe, then Corat Rambler, and racing up the hill is Galpin Deschamps, just avoiding the loose horse by three or four lengths to Jury Colombe. This is the champion, Galpin Deschamps, coming up the Cheltenham Hill and backs up in the Gold Cup. Galpin Deschamps, a dual Gold Cup winner.
So many years this race had eluded and frustrated him, and now he has got two dual winners of it, Albin Foto and the very classy Galpin Deschamps. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, he is classy, isn't he? Like, Paul just jumped out, rode a race on him. Paul has full confidence in him. He has more confidence in him, I think, than I have, and I can see why. He's obviously getting that sort of a feel from the saddle all along.
And he's the complete staying chaser now.
He is, and he gallops, he jumps. What more, you know, he stays, what more do you need, you know?
Dreams now of potentially a third Gold Cup for him, emulating Best Mate?
I imagine we have to do that, yeah.
That was reaction to Galpin Deschamps' win in the Gold Cup today. I'm delighted to say that Ruby Walsh joins me now on the line. Ruby, how special was it to see that today?
Oh, it was brilliant to watch it, Marie. Brilliant for Paul, brilliant for Willie, for Greg and Archie Turley as well, and great for the sport that a horse like Galpin Deschamps, who's been, I'm not going to say aggressively campaigned, but lined up in the John Durkin, ran in the Savage Chase, the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup, turned up at Cheltenham and won the Gold Cup, because you want to see the top horses competing, and it was just great to see it.
You've ridden so many special horses yourself. What is it about Galpin Deschamps that allows him to be able to do things like today?
Well, so what makes Davy Clifford so good, or anyone like that? It's just they're better than the rest. He's a good jumper. He's a great mentality. He has pace more so than speed, and he has builders of stamina. And that's what Gold Cup winners need. Gold Cup winners need stamina. The Gold Cup is run not far off the speed of a 2 mile champion chase, but you have to do it for 3.25 miles. So you need to be the best horse to win a Gold Cup, and right this minute in time, Galpin Deschamps is the best horse. But the beauty of Cheltenham, Marie, is that you got to see those that will maybe take him on next year. So you're looking at Factifile, Corbett's Cross, Grey Dawning. We all got to see the new opposition this week as well, so it's exciting times.
Yeah, it really is. Paul, after the race, mentioned Galpin's bravery as well, Ruby.
Yeah, he was really tough. You know him differently this year, but, you know, horses are not just like humans, and they get a little slower as they get a bit older. And, you know, he had to ride him a bit differently. He rode him closer to the pace, but if you ask him a big question at the last, but you kind of knew when he responded that he actually had a bit more in the tank, and he was just very, very good.
Yeah, Paul even said afterwards he didn't know if he had that extra bit in the tank, and then when he needed it, he was able to draw on it. So what was so different about this year, Ruby?
What was so different than this year? Last year, it was probably expectation. Not expectation, it was hope. More so than expectation. It was, will he stay, won't he stay? He had been here to win a Martin Pipe as a hurdler. He'd come back for a Turner's Novice Chase and fallen at the last, and he was going to win. But he turned up at the Gold Cup, and it's, will he stay? Is he good enough? And he was brilliant. But then, like anything or anyone who's a defending champion, he comes back with all the expectation on this year. Everyone's expecting it. You know, Paul has to deliver. Willie has to get in here and form. The horse doesn't know any of that, but the humans that are involved with him can feel all that pressure. And, you know, he had to deliver, and he did deliver.
Yeah, and you mentioned Paul delivering there as well. He seems to be able to do it on the biggest stage and the biggest days.
Yeah, it's funny. Someone said earlier that he was had to take over from me. But Paul Townend didn't take over from me. Paul Townend was challenging me before I ever retired. And it hasn't surprised me what he's achieved, because he was putting me under pressure when I was still writing. And it's just been a natural progression for him.
And what makes him so good, Ruby? Paul?
What makes him so good? Mistakes, Marie. Same as every other jockey. Who makes the fewest mistakes? And Paul Townend makes the fewest mistakes. He doesn't overthink things. He doesn't get rattled or fazed by pressure. He just makes the fewest mistakes. And that sounds so ridiculous simple. Yeah. But when you're operating in a pressured environment, it's not that simple.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with you. So Willie was interviewed afterwards, and he said Galopin might be back for a third successive title.
Yeah, well, sure, the dream is alive. Whether he'd be back for a third or not, the dream is alive.
And do you think he'd be able for a third?
Yes, he's only 8, rising 9. He's in the right age bracket. He's the right profile. Everything you could possibly want about him is there. And you have to be positive, Murray.
Did you have any concerns when you were watching the race? I know the loose horse seemed to spook people a little bit.
Yeah, the loose horse definitely had me worried. Paul had to make a couple of decisions. Does he go inside? Does he go outside? When do you tackle a loose? When do you challenge a loose horse? You can't control what a loose horse is going to do. So it can be difficult. So my heart was in my mouth a little bit as that when they started the descent, and Paul's got the right calls. He came back off the loose one and then went at him at the right time. It's just, they're the uncontrollables. You can control the controllables, but you can't control the uncontrollables, and that's what a loose horse is.
Let's have a look at some of the other races, starting with the Triumph Hurdle because again it went to Willie and Majborough, who seems like a real star of the future, Ruby.
He does, a huge big horse, Marie, a beautiful looking horse, and I thought Mark Walsh gave him a really, really good ride. He travelled really well, but he had to ride the pace. The horses in front of him were stretching, and I thought Mark Walsh gave him a good ride and got the better of Cargese from the back of the last. So yeah, that was a good start to the day for William Mullins anyway.
Yeah, you enjoyed it. I heard you talking about you don't see too many jockeys riding with patience.
Yeah, but it's like not making mistakes. Patience is an easy thing to have before you go out, but when you get to eat a battle, having patience is not that simple.
Willie also claimed the county hurdle with the absurd 12-1 winner. Another good one for Willie.
Yeah. I think you enjoyed that one yourself, did you?
I wasn't expecting you to text me back, so thanks for that.
Yeah, well.
So for our listeners, I texted Ruby about this horse about 20 minutes before the race went off, and he told me to go for it. So thank you, Ruby.
Well, I was actually looking at the text message thinking, I don't really fancy it, but if it happens to win,
no
I'll never
way.
Hit the end of it. I didn't think he would be able to handle the ground. The horse that ran in the Melbourne Cup on such a quick surface. But I was kind of looking at it, as Willie Mullins always says, be positive. And I was looking at the message thinking, if I happen to tell Marie Claude no and that wins, I'll never hear the end of it. So I just said yes.
The race of the day, though, anyway, the one I enjoyed most, because obviously I didn't have a horse in the Gold Cup or any connection to Galpin, was the Albert Bartlett hurdle and Stellar Story and just the drama of it, Ruby. What a brilliant win for Stellar Story, but a tough watch in ways.
It was, but it was brilliant. Obviously, it was the second winner for Gordon Elliott and the first winner for Jenkinstown, but it was a huge day for Sam Ewing. And he is one of the stars of the future for Irish racing. He's a brilliant young rider, and it was. But it was kind of hard luck on Keelan Woods, yeah, too, for Ben Pauling. Keelan is obviously, he's Irish as well, and you know, he didn't do anything wrong. But when you get mugged, you always think if, but, and maybe. But Sam Ewing is a bright talent, and he's very neat. He's tidy. He has loads of guts and courage. That's like about Sam Ewing, and you know, he's a good character as well. He's a really, really nice young fella, and you know, I was glad to see him ride a winner.
Yeah, it was a good race and really enjoyable. So Ruby, the week is over. What was your highlight?
Oh, my highlight was Willie Mullins training 100 winners, Marie, or getting his 100 Cheltenham winner. Like, that's a figure that you just, it doesn't even, like, as Willie said to me, sir, it's not anything we ever set out to achieve, and it's not, because it would never have seemed attainable. Like, when you think Paul Nicholls is still on 49, and when I was in my youth, I had to go to England to get the rides and the good horses. When you think that Willie Mullins has overtaken Paul Nicholls since then and gone to train 100 Cheltenham winners, I think it's phenomenal.
Any hard feelings with the English over there? Do they mind being beaten so heavily?
No, but there's plenty of, I'm not going to say negativity either, that's the wrong word, but there seems to be this downer a little bit on it, and on, but that's in every sport. I mean, you should know better than anybody, but it's just when somebody gets dominant, people want to knock it down, and then when they're gone, they celebrate them. But to me, when you're living in the era of Willie Mullins, you should enjoy it, because it won't last forever, and he is incredible.
Okay, well, on that note, Ruby, thank you so much, as always. Will you be back with us next week?
I'll be back with you on Monday, Marie.
Great. Talk to you then. Thanks so much.
Game on.
Racing.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We're turning our attention to football now, and the draw for the Champions League and the Europa League was done earlier today. So Man City were drawn to play Real Madrid in the quarterfinals. City are going to be away in the first leg. Third year in a row for these sides to be paired together in the knockout stages. Arsenal are going to play Bayern Munich, and the winners of that tie will play City or Real in the last four. And then in the other quarterfinals, it's Atletico Madrid against Borussia Dortmund, PSG against Barcelona. And in the Europa League quarterfinals, Liverpool are going to take on Atalanta, and then West Ham will play Bayer Leverkusen. And in the Conference League, Aston Villa were drawn with Lille. So lots of really good ties to look forward to. Paul Curry is with me in studio, and Fergal Brennan is with us on the line as well. Fergal, a tough enough old task for Arsenal, do you think?
It is. Obviously, on the back of a fairly dramatic penalty shootout win over Porto. Of course, from the quarterfinals onwards, there's no country protection or anything like that. You can get any team. It could have been another Premier League team. It could have been Manchester City, but it was Bayern Munich. And as you said there, there's some pretty bruising memories for Arsenal fans in terms of recent meetings with Bayern Munich. The 10-2 is the last time that they've played them, and that was a really damaging night for Arsenal. And kind of, we've seen the slide that Arsenal then entered into on the back of those types of results, and dropping out of qualifying for the Champions League, and a couple of very hard years of either qualifying for the Europa League or not qualifying for Europe at all. It'd be difficult to say they're back in terms of being able to go punch for punch with Bayern Munich or Real Madrid. But this is a very different setting for Arsenal now. The team that they have in place, the manager that they have in place, is a world of difference from the last time they faced each other in a knockout Champions League game. Bayern Munich are still, for me, favourites. I know, obviously, they're not doing what they would have anticipated to do in the Bundesliga this season. Bayer Leverkusen are probably going to nip them to the title. but this is a massive game for Arsenal and another test to see if the progress that they're making can continue. We've seen a lot of Premier League examples this season where they've stood up and answered a question that's been thrown at them by Liverpool or Manchester City. This is now a different equation. Can they do it against a team that is used to being in this sort of a Champions League situation when they're not? That's going to be the big challenge for Arteta and his players.
Paul, would you fancy Arsenal against Bayern Munich?
I'd agree with Fergal. I think Bayern Munich will go into that as favourites. I think in particular given the fact that Bayern Munich will be able to play their second leg at home.
Probably. Even when you think that Arsenal are going toe-to-toe with Liverpool and Man City.
Yeah, I do, but I think that is a fair point. But if you look at even the performances against Porto over those two legs, mm-hmm. you know, that was a very favourable draw and they actually, you know, kind of limped over the line in the end. In the first leg in particular, they looked a bit ropey. Just some of the chances that they let Porto create, and Porto had a number of chances in the second leg as well, whereby if they were a little more efficient, they could have put one away. I just think there's a slight bit of nervousness still about Arsenal that would make you question about how far they can go in both the Premier League and the Champions League, in the sense that when the pressure really comes on, you probably see a little bit of a fragility that you don't typically see when they're kind of in the rhythm of Premier League games. But yeah, I would just fancy Bayern, even given the fact how kind of up and down their season has been under Thomas Tuchel and Harry Kane against Arsenal. Yeah. It's just that. Written, isn't it?
Yeah. Man City and Real Madrid, Fergal, we saw them in the semis last year. City played unbelievable and made quite light work of Real Madrid in the end. But are they different teams now, do you think?
I think the difference with Real Madrid significantly this season is Jude Bellingham. Every time in the Champions League in the last few years, their calling card has been experience. They've got to this position because of their experience. And then when they came up against City last year, that wasn't enough. Obviously, the year before it was the 6-5 aggregate win, and then Real Madrid went on and beat Liverpool in the final. The concern with Madrid is that every year that experience means that the experienced players are a year older. And generally speaking, each year they lose one of their big players. A couple of years ago it was Sergio Ramos, last summer it was Karim Benzema, this summer it's probably going to be Luka Modric. Manchester City kind of don't wilt in the face of that experience. They've got plenty of it of their own. But I really think Bellingham is a game changer in almost every way. He's been incredible for them this season. The goals he scored, the performances he's put in, and the confidence that he's got of, I'm ready to come into this team that's one of the best in the world, the most successful team in Champions League history, and I'm already the main man and I'm perfectly happy with that. I'll shoulder this responsibility. And he's suspended this weekend for the league game against Osasuna, so he'll be nice and fresh. He won't play again now until after the international break. I think it'll be really tight. Ancelotti and Guardiola both said that in the press conferences. Ancelotti effectively said, we win one, they win one, we'll see how it goes. And he's bags of experience at this type of situation as well. I think it'll be really, really tight. And City have been excellent this season, but I don't quite see them in the same vein as last year, where they were just ruthless. Every game, every opposition they came up against, they just power past them. I still think they win 90%+ of their games, but there just seems to be maybe a little tiny drop in level. There's obviously the situation now with Kevin De Bruyne and his injuries. Haaland has been brilliant this year, but he was beyond brilliant last year. So there's been a little bit of a reduction in that. And obviously the demands of going for a double treble has never been done before. They're still in a position to do it. Obviously they've got the FA Cup this weekend. I just think that's shaving a little something off Man City this season.
Then in the Europa League, Liverpool and Atalanta, Paul, Jurgen Klopp reckons that they'll make it a bit uncomfortable for them.
Yeah, they could do, and it is coming to that stage of the season now where the games really start to stack up. And I mean, they've got a pretty important game in the FA Cup. They obviously went on and won the League Cup. They have the Premier League to contend with. And maybe at one point along the way, whether it be Man City, Liverpool, Arsenal, they might fall at one of these hurdles. But is Atalanta going to be that for Liverpool? It's very hard to see. Liverpool were so good again last night. I know the game was dead and buried, but they're just so good going forward.
Yeah.
And they've got so many weapons that they can hurt you with. And you'd be very surprised if they were to get beaten by Atalanta, and then whether they play Benfica or Marseille in the next round, you would expect them still to go on and win from there. So it looks teed up for Liverpool and Dublin for that final, particularly with Klopp's final
don't know where season. People are going to get hotel rooms to stay. Well, I'd say my house would be packed out.
It'd be absolutely bonkers. But yeah, you could definitely see Liverpool going on from there, Marie. I think irrespective of who they were drawn against, they were always going to be the top team in that competition, and you would still expect, given the draw, that they would make it to the final.
Fergal, it is FA Cup quarter-final weekend. Of course, the big one is Liverpool and Manchester United on Sunday. How do you see this one going?
I do fancy Liverpool to win. They've got a very good record at United in recent years. Some pretty hefty defeats they've handed out when they've made that short trip down the M62. And Jurgen Klopp, like all the best managers, relishes this idea of going to the home of the rival. We see it in Spain with Real Madrid and Barcelona. We saw it in years gone by with Wenger and Ferguson and Mourinho. Guardiola likes it as well. And I think effectively the season hangs on this weekend for Manchester United, because regardless of whether or not the Premier League do get that fifth Champions League position for next season, United are out of the running as it stands. That's not to say that they can't barge their way back in, but it's Spurs and Villa who are in the box seat at the moment. Spurs have got a game in hand as well, which will be massively beneficial for them. I don't see a situation where United win this. I know that sounds like a bit of a bold statement. They are at home. This is their only chance of a trophy this season. But I think if they hadn't drawn Liverpool, if they'd drawn a different Premier League team, or if they were maybe fortunate enough to have got a Championship side, yep, they could have powered on and delayed these questions for a few more weeks. But Liverpool, as Paul mentioned there, with the Prague game last night, they were 4 goals to the good before kickoff, and then they were 4 goals to the good again within 15 minutes. I don't expect that sort of a situation at the weekend, but it just shows the levels that Klopp is demanding and dragging from the players at the moment, that they won't let up. They've got a bit of a break now with the internationals. Some players will be going away, some players will be staying. And with Manchester United, they are capable of pulling off the odd sporadic result, but not normally against a team at the level of Liverpool or a couple of weeks ago against Manchester City.
I think what Fergal has said there about Manchester United and their season somewhat hinging on that FA Cup tie is very true of Newcastle and Eddie Howe, who go and play Man City at the Etihad.
True, yeah.
Like, there's a bit of pressure on Eddie Howe now, with given the fact that they were very unfortunate in the Champions League, and they were probably a bit naive that they finished bottom of the group. They could have found their way into the secondary European competition. And since then, their league form has been really poor, and some of the performances have been so uncharacteristic. The aggression and intensity of their play, I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, is just gone compared to last year. They concede a hell of a lot more goals. I know they've been down a number of players, centre-halves and goalkeepers. That hasn't helped the situation. But the Saudis, I would imagine, are starting to assess that situation and wondering, is it time to maybe change it? If, let's say, for instance, the season was to peter out, if they were to get knocked out in the FA Cup on the weekend, I think Eddie Howe needs a result here, and I think he needs to find a way of lifting the FA Cup, because that would buy him time, and it would be a step in the right direction for Newcastle, who were being starved for trophies for so long. But I think that is a massive game for Newcastle. I don't think you can underestimate how big that is for Eddie Howe.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well, Fergal. Could you say the same about Chelsea against Leicester, Paul?
Chelsea, oh my God, like a seesaw up and down every week. I mean, it was a good result during the week against Newcastle. It was a half decent performance. You would expect that they would have too much for Leicester. Leicester themselves have been struggling a little bit in the Championship of late. They're probably not in the same sort of vein of form that they were earlier on in the year, and they're probably more focused on actually just getting promoted back into the Premier League under Maresca, who's done a fantastic job there, than they are progressing in the FA Cup. But for Pochettino, like, I'm sure when he's looking at this fixture, he's thinking, okay, just get through this and into the semi-finals, back to Wembley, and see if they can get their hands on a trophy. So many people will label Pochettino's failure to win a trophy in English football as something that has somewhat carried with them since his Tottenham days, and maybe a trophy at Chelsea would buy him some time with Bowley. But yeah, listen, for Chelsea, Marie, it's probably gone beyond the stage of having decent performances. It's all about results between now and the end of the season, and the more positive results Pochettino can get, the more the fans will get behind him. If they could add a trophy to that, that would certainly be steps in the right direction for what is still a very young Chelsea team, but one that needs to open in terms of results.
Absolutely. And then, Fergal, the other one is Wolves and Coventry.
Should be fairly straightforward. I think in comparison to the other games, there's a bit more hanging on it. As you mentioned, there's the potential for three managers that whose seasons could be defined by this weekend. Gary O'Neill will see this, you'd imagine, as relatively straightforward. And he's somebody that I think when the season comes to an end will be being assessed as probably the not the manager of the year necessarily, but in terms of a wild card or maybe a most underrated manager. He came in, we all know the story at the start of the season, he had so little time to work with the squad. There was the massive controversy in the opening game against Manchester United and the disallowed goal, and they've had more than their fair share of VAR calls going against them this season. They've just kept on rallying. They're probably in a position to maybe go as high and finish as they did under Nuno Santo when they got into the Europa, what was the extended Europa League back then. I'm mixing up my competitions there. But he's been fantastic. And I think Wolves, they don't have the deepest squad, but they're in a position now where if they get through this, it's a Wembley semi-final. If they get a favourable draw, if maybe City and Liverpool draw each other and they get another Premier League side, or if Leicester can sneak through against Chelsea, which I don't think is beyond the realms, then they'll look at that and think, wow, we could just go again. And then the old cliche, you're in a final, you never know. But I think they've been really impressive. The concern obviously for him this summer will be, are some of the big hitters going to come sniffing around his better players? Pedro Neto being one of them. He's injured this weekend, but he's been fantastic for them this season. But for now, until the end of the campaign, Gary O'Neill just needs to keep it going.
Well, limited enough Premier League action over the weekend because of those FA Cup games. But is it Fulham and Spurs the big game, really?
Yeah, it is for Tottenham. I mean, it's all about momentum now between now and the end of the season. And Ange Postecoglou seems to have gotten that side back to where they were before. They seem to struggle with injuries and players going off to the Asian Cup and the African Cup of Nations. So it's all about hanging on to that fifth place and obviously getting as close to Aston Villa as you possibly can. A win on the weekend would put them ahead and level on game, so that would be huge for Tottenham and Postecoglou. And it's been a great season. They've had some fantastic results, some fantastic performances. They need to make sure that they get that top four spot, and that's a big game against Fulham on the weekend.
There's a lot of action at the bottom part of the table as well, Fergal, and that battle for relegation, to avoid relegation.
There's the potential that a big gap could open up. Luton against Forest, if Forest were to win, I think that would stretch it to 6 points between 17th and 18th. And obviously we're still waiting on news over potential points deductions for Forest and Everton. But if there were to be no points deductions, or that maybe they weren't to come in time to really impact the relegation picture, if Forest were to win, you could possibly say that the relegation picture is wrapped up. I just think the result in midweek for Luton against Bournemouth, when they were three up and they just let the game just drift away from them and then ended up with nothing at the end, that'll be a big blow. I've been very impressed with Luton, particularly since the start of 2024, and Rob Edwards, the way he's gone about things. Obviously everyone keep an eye on Chidozie Ogbeni as well. He's been fantastic for them, but they do seem to kind of mess up when they're given an opportunity, and you can't be three goals up in a Premier League game against a team that's roughly in the same area in the table as you as Bournemouth and then just completely throw it away. I really think that could come back to haunt them, because they're potentially relying on those points deductions that Forest and Everton could then get sucked back into it.
Okay, Fergal Brennan, thank you for all of that. We will check in with you again next week. We're going to turn our attention now to football here at home. Shamrock Rovers are hoping to pick up their first win of the SSC Electricity Men's Premier Division campaign tonight. They're taking on Galway United at Eamon DC Park. Bows are playing Derry City at Dalymount. Dundalk host Waterford, and Shelburne are away to St Patrick's Athletic, and John Kenny is there for us.
The home side picked up three valuable points when they beat Dundalk last week. A maximum for John Daly's side, much needed after an indifferent start to the league. They now welcome their great Dublin rival Shelburne to Inchicore, a side that lead the league and who have been pulling in decent crowds recently, and tonight is no different. It's going to be sold out at Inchicore and a great atmosphere to boot. While St. Pat's have dispensed with their Liverpool Academy on loan keeper Marcelo Pitaluga and replaced him with Danny Rodgers back between the posts for the 1-0 win over Dundalk last week, it'll be interesting to see if Daly reverts to Pitaluga tonight or stays with Rodgers in goal. Shells, unbeaten in their first five games, sit proudly on top of the league and had Mark Coyle voted as the Soccer Writers Player of the Month recently. Well, some 5,000 spectators will squeeze their way into Inchicore tonight to see St. Pat's, who won three out of four meetings in the league between the sides last year, battled out in an ideal night for football. There's a touch of spring in the air. Well, elsewhere, we have a live game for you on RT2 television as newcomers Galway United take on the champions Shamrock Rovers. You can see that on RT2 television. Managerless Bohemians with Pat Fenlon in interim charge welcome Derry City to Dalymount, and Dundalk, struggling at the moment at the bottom of the league, take on Waterford. And all four games will kick off at 7:45.
John Kenny there reporting from Richmond Park. Paul Corrie, it's a big night in the League of Ireland, particularly for Shamrock Rovers, who are still trying to get their first win of the season.
Yeah, they need to get going, Marie, and we obviously had a similar situation last year when they were slow out of the blocks. But you feel as if Derry in particular have gone up a gear, and you know, if that gap was to get so big, it might be one that's more difficult to rein in compared to last year. But I think the worrying thing for Stephen Bradley is not only being the results but the manner of the performances. I think they've been sluggish. I think they've been a little bit predictable. I think they're desperately missing the pace of Neil Ferrugia. I've been saying it now for a while that without him on the side, they really lack legs, and they find it hard to penetrate teams, and some of their play actually becomes a little more predictable. So I'm sure Stephen Bradley be hoping that tonight is the night that one, they get 3 points, but also be a little more efficient in the final third and score a couple of goals and create a couple of chances. But going to Galway, Marie, is not easy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. And we heard John Kenny there at Richmond Park for Pats and Shells. That should be a good one.
Oh, absolutely. And particularly given the start that Shelburne have made to this season. Really good win last week against Bowes. A lot of people have been maybe questioning about how long they can go on this run, but it certainly looks like, given the first couple of games, they're four on the trot now of straight wins, and they look so well set up defensively, and they look as if they've added a bit more in the final third now and a bit more in midfield, whereby when they get possession of the ball they have a bit more quality to go and hurt teams. Pats is a very difficult place to go as well. Obviously a decent result against Dundalk last week, looking to build on that after what has been for them probably a little bit of a disappointing start. I know they've lost and changed a number of players from last season, but John Daly be hoping, particularly home form at Richmond Park, to get a positive result against Shells. But Damien Duff and that side, they are one difficult team to break down.
They really are. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us though. We'll be talking Gaelic football and hurling after these.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to talk Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that Brendan Devaney joins me now on the line. How are you, Brendan?
Good, Marie. Yourself?
Great. Yeah, happy Friday. Big weekend ahead. Yeah. Loads of good Gaelic football, we hope, anyway. And it, like, just on the football, because it is that weekend where we could see some teams relegated. Roscommon and Monaghan are particularly in danger. Let's start with Monaghan, though. They're playing Tyrone in Healy Park. They have 2 points from 5 matches, so they kind of need to win this one, don't they?
Yeah, certainly, Marie. And of course, that one that they won was a surprising one away to Dublin, when a lot of people pre-season had potentially them tipped for relegation. They were like, Monaghan are going to do it again. But since then, Marie, they're in the top three of, you know, worst defences in the four divisions. You know, they're minus 40. They're conceding a host of goals. You know, they seem to concede 3 goals so often. And, you know, from 9 points down, you're going to be in a lot of trouble because they're only averaging maybe about 13 on the other side. That said, Conor McCarty's back. Of course, the legend himself, Conor McManus. That'll help things a little. Tyrone, a bit unpredictable, you know, away from home. The question mark, you never know, Monaghan. Tyrone will be a bit unpredictable. As we spoke last week, Marie, on Down to Kerry, and give a half-decent performance. Only lost by 4 after the hammerings they got previously. So they themselves, of course, have the likes of a big Donnelly back. McShane's close, you know. I think McGeary is close to maybe coming back in and showing some form. So it's just looking like, in terms of power, you add McCurry and obviously Canavan's in there as well. Dara's just, as I say, I think the two lads is unmarkable in their days. So you would think scoring power lies still with Tyrone. You'd expect them to win it. And I can't see Roscommon or Monaghan getting out of this situation.
Yeah, I think especially for the Tyrone-Monaghan game, because it's a vital game for Tyrone as well. They only have 3 points, so they're going to know what's at stake for them.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, it's been a tough season for them, of course, you know, with everything that's happened in the background with big Fergal Logan and that. And again, Marie, I hope he's on the mend there. But, you know, wee bit of a rebuild there. You know, they've gone back to some of the youth. The thing about Tyrone is they're always producing players. You know, there's always players coming through from them. And at the back there, you know, Devlin, Clark, you know, Quinn, there's two Devlins in there. They're obviously missing McNamee, Hampsey. You know, McKernan is a bit of an injury as well. Hart is an injury. So their defence is a bit unknown. I mean, untrusted yet. You know, they still, I don't think, have that solid rear structure that you would see maybe with the likes of a Derry. So I think going forward, they're dangerous. You know, I think Big Kilpatrick might have an injury as well. So like a lot of teams, there's a lot of injuries with them, but the firepower that they have coming up and coming back in, particularly experience for the likes of Donnelly, and if they can get McSheehan working inside, because he'd be such a threat maybe because of McCurry and Canavan's ability. And if they were flipping around, coming in and out and swapping the ham interchange, Tyrone could go long diagonal. If McSheehan could go back to some of that form we've seen back from the last All-Ireland victory, he is a big handful up front. So I think going forward this year, Tyrone will be very, very dangerous. At the back is where it all hangs on. Can they get a good replacement for the likes of McNamee, and can they get solid at that? You know, when you get into your defensive shape, can they stop the tackles and be solid enough to do that? That is the question mark hanging over Tyrone.
So Roscommon are facing Kerry, which is obviously an extremely difficult task. And I think when you take into account the fact that they only have 3 points in five games, and they've scored less than anyone else in Division One this year as well, averaging just 13 points per match. And that's not going to beat you, beat Kerry, if you're only getting around that, is it, Brendan?
Yeah, listen, Davy Burke's a good coach, man. There's no doubt in last year, and you look at the league, we see it all the time. Command probably give it a bit of real bit of early energy, and Roscommon flying in the league, and then, you know, it didn't happen in the championship. You know, it looks like, is he trying to reverse the rules in that? I mean, he's quoted the last day saying it was made against boys, against Mayo, which I would take some insult to that if I was a Roscommon player. I mean, no, Mayo have always had that physical strength over them. Roscommon maybe a lot of natural footballers, but it's getting that balance between having good footballers and being hard to beat. But, you know, if they have good footballers, they have to score more. That's one thing. I mean, 13 points is not good. Remember, you're looking at now, it's 16, 17 points to be in the mix of any game. That's kind of where you need to be at, you know, and that's where Roscommon are falling down. Now, he did say the players were lacking in energy as well. And listen, people say things on the spot, Marie, but I'm thinking the energy thing must be down to either how they're resting or are they training too hard in between. I mean, if he said they were tired because we were training really hard for the championship, I would understand that. But the energy thing, if he's on about Roscommon having lack of energy, that comes back to him and his management team. So listen, against Kerry, you know, you just look like they're going to finish the season strongly. They want to have good games in the league, you know, possibly make the league final, of course, which the likes of them and Dublin would like to do. So yeah, I just can't see, again, you're looking at forward power is what it's all about. And Kerry, listen, have way too much for Roscommon this weekend.
So what about Galway and Dublin then? Galway have been so up and down, and then you have Dublin who are in this brilliant run of form. Can you expect it to go any way than maybe what the form would tell you?
Yeah, I mean, I just think when you take out those players that are missing with Galway, you know, you know, obviously Shane Walsh is got his feet up in Bally somewhere. I wish I wasn't too far away from him now. But, you know, you look at obviously McDeer out and Comer. You put those players in, I mean, Galway are a completely different team. Mm-hmm. And I think with other sides, they can maybe afford to lose an odd player. But what's scaring, I think, a lot of teams now, Marie, is Dublin the last few games. The way, you know, I know there's question marks about how Derry played their hand in Celtic Park, but it's the way that they're doing things. I mean, there's not a word about O'Hanlon and goals, playing really well. No Howard Merchant, you know, and the names that we all know look like they are mad. It's looked like it's their first All-Ireland and they want to back it up. You know, Fenton, I mean, what more can we say? But Kilkenny, O'Killian, Small, Scully, they just look like they are mad to get at it this season. And that's a bit scary, and definitely be a bit scary for Galway. As I say, mate, just where the predicament of Roscommon and Monaghan find themselves in, I don't think they're going to win another game. So I think Barry Joyce is on record. I don't know if he's on record, but I've heard from Galway people on the know that, listen, it's all about championship this year. Galway just want to hang in the league and come really strong at it. I mean, they had a good enough performance a last day out, but, you know, I think that their whole mindset is all about championship, and that's what Pádraig Joyce wants. I think that's what he's going for, and this will be his last year, Emery.
Okay, well, I can see the reasoning for that as well, just given maybe how the teams that finished top of the league last year ended up faring out in championship. And Mayo was one of them. They seem to have approached the league a little bit differently this year. They're playing Derry, and it's actually one of those ones, I think, that people are going to be curious about, just to see where both of those teams are at.
Definitely. I think so many league games always have so many things going on in the background, because not only is the league and the points and relegation, or it's also like thinking about what if they played in the championship later year, and are we seeing progression from Kevin McStay's team? You know, we talked there, you know, about them the second half against Tyrone, where they were absolutely blown away up in Healy Park, and then how they blew Roscommon away, 7 points without reply in the third quarter and just showed that power and strength that they have. You know, always a dangerous opponent. Listen, I think Savage, you know, over-reliance on O'Donoghue at this point and how they get some backup to him. You know, O'Shea was on the last day. I think he's had 100 games this weekend. So there's question marks of him. Obviously, Reap back and goals had a great game as well. But if they want to, I think, take a step, or if they want to gauge themselves, if Hard plays his proper team this weekend, there's a great barometer because you're going to come up against a take-off defence who don't give the ball away and are going to be hard to break down. So you've got to be really good on the ball. Your ball retention must be great. You must create a lot of chances and take them when they come. So I think this is a great game to test where Mayo has had. But where are Derry at now after that last game? Does Hart pick up the mantle and go at it again? Because that's the thing about the league. We were on with possibly Roscommon pulling Mayo into a relegation dogfight. If Mayo beat Derry, they go level with Derry, but he'll beat them on the head-to-head, so they could find themselves back in the league final. Does McStay want to be there? It's very hard to know. Yeah. Emery, Hart normally wants to win everything that he does, so the fact that he, in some ways, didn't put out his best team against Derry, maybe he wants to meet Derry in the league final. If you look at it from last year, beat Dublin at Celtic Park, but then Dublin beat them well in the league final. Maybe he wants to flip that in his head this year, and that's Mickey's master plan. No better man for the master plan.
Mickey and his master plan. Right, well, we'll be finding out what that is over the next little while. We'll be keeping an eye on it as well. Brendan Devaney, as always, thank you so much for that. It's time for hurling now, and Shane McGrath joins us on the line. Shane, I'm actually going to start with a little bit of bad news, if that's all right with you, and it's the news that Seamus Kennedy has suffered. He's a cruciate injury, so he's ruptured his ACL. Devastating news, not for the county first and foremost, but for the player and the county then as well.
Oh, absolutely, Marie. Like, I mean, Shane is kind of the unsung heroes since he made his debut on the hurling, made his championship debut in 2016, but he's played the whole way up along. He's been a great servant, nicer guy you won't meet, Marie. Just such a sound guy, goes about his business so well. And then when you look back on games, you know, Shane McKenzie's kind of person, really, when you're watching the game, you're thought, yeah, he did fine. And when you look back, you go, well, like, you know, what a game he had. A couple of All-Ireland medals he has, scored points from wing-backs in both of them. You know, that's just the type of guy he is. Like, he might never get, you know, maybe All-Star recognition or anything like that, but just such a great team player. And look, I suppose maybe years ago, Marie, if you ruptured your ACL, it could have been career-ending, but look, he had a great medical team there with Tip, and look, hopefully we'll see him back wearing the blue and gold and for his club and Clonmel and St Mary's as well, sooner rather than later. Like,
yeah, it's a really, really tough blow, and we absolutely wish him all the best. To the on-field action now, and it's the final round of hurling before the knockout stages. So we're going to find out who's going to make the semi-finals and the finals, and we will see who is going to be placed in next season's restructured divisions. There's a lot of games this weekend, and there's a huge amount of play, and unfortunately, Shane McGrath, we don't have a huge amount of time. So I'm going to start with Waterford and Cork, and just the fact that this game will decide, or Wexford and Cork, which one was going to play in Division 1A of that new structured Allianz Hurling League. A draw would be grand for Wexford, but Cork must win, and then that would secure a place in this year's league semi-finals, depending on the results in the Waterford-Kilkenny match. So it's not straightforward.
No, Cork have to win, Kilkenny have to lose for Cork to go through. Wexford there are on 5 points at the moment, so, they'd be looking to try and get the win too, like, because obviously Clare are on 7, so it's all in Clare's hands there with them playing awfully. So look, Wexford, great momentum there now, finally got their win after their 3 draws, Marie. You know, Keane Byrne just thought it was funny even looking at him on the telly.
He was
often said to me, because like he looks like someone that like he could get away playing the primary game.
Absolutely,
at half time, you know what I mean? And it was often said about me as well,
really?
But like, you know,
yeah,
from physical beautiful size as well. Asked after, look, you wasn't the biggest inter-county guy, but 5 points from play, and you know, very confident interview afterwards. Loved that interview from him, very honest. Great to see, like, Matcha Hanlon was back, you know, and it was a great performance for him without Lee Chin, Dee O'Keefe, Conor Mack. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're three, like, nearly bankers for him, championship normally for him. So I think Keith Rosser will be going in, and like, if they get the win, obviously happy days, you know, and then. They could potentially be looking at a league semi-final, but otherwise I think it's been a very good lead for Wexford. And from a Cork point of view, I just see they've made 6 changes, Marie, from the Offaly demolishing Offaly, yeah. Really, there's no point in another saying anything else. Sean O'Donoghue's back, Tommy O'Connell, Dara Fitz, Brian Hayes, Kieran Joyce, and obviously Pat Horgan. So I think Cork, if they get all their best players and have them all available, still think that they're a very, very good team. So with all that said and with the changes made, you know, I think Pat Ryan he'll be going hard for this win, and I do think the Cork boys will win this game tomorrow, Marie.
Okay, so what about Limerick and Galway? So we've seen the return of Declan Hannan. We know how strong Limerick are. There's a lot of question marks over Galway and what Henry Scheffel needs to do. Is this a really important game for these teams?
So, yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I think from, like, it's hard to know with Limerick. Like, I mean, they're just so good, Marie. Like, I think they've eight changes made from beating Tip, right? And it's still a serious team. I was looking at their bench, right, and counting up, right? On their bench, they have 15 All-Stars, lads that have won 15 All-Stars between them on their subs bench, right, Limerick. And they still don't have Kyle Hayes on that bench or Darragh O'Donovan. Like, I just think that they just cemented the fact that they are the best team in the country, bar none, right? With the way that, I know it's only 1 point in it, Marie, but hurling people, like, will tell you, if you didn't know, watch the game and you just heard the result, you thought it was close. It wasn't close, like, let's be honest, you know, as a Tip person, Limerick were the much better team there. 17 points, I think they got in the second half. They're just unreal, Marie. They're just so good. I think I did feel Galway would go at this, and I thought, like, they'd have a great chance and they'd really want to get to league semi-final, because their first round of the championship is going to be against Carlow. So, like, you know, like, they could kind of really go and look to progress in the league, but, like, they've no Conor Whelan or Dahi Burke because they're both suspended. So they're two massive losses, and I don't know, I just think Limerick, they're just getting better and better. They're getting all their best people back. Yeah, Dickie Hannan starting, Sean Finn's back on the bench as well, and even, like, Cathal O'Neill wing back, he's going to want to try and make the team now. He's probably, you know, he doesn't want to be a bit player anymore. Shane O'Brien is getting his chance to wing forward. He's a lot of learnings. He was quiet against Dublin, so he's going to try and make it. And your man Fergal O'Connor, cornerback, is absolutely flying it all league. But let's be realistic, Marie. Who's he going to keep off the team? Yeah, Sean Finn or Mike Casey? So just where they're at. Like, yeah. So, yeah. Okay. They're just awesome. They really are. Yeah.
And look, huge credit to them. Absolutely. They've done brilliant. They've raised the standards and they've raised the bar. But everybody now needs to catch up, and hopefully they'll do that this season. Shane, the good news is we're out of time. You can go back to your screaming baby. Since it sounds like you're double jobbing there.
Bad time is crazy time here, Marie. Yeah,
no doubt you're hands on. Right, we will talk to you soon. Niall Moran is going to be with us on Monday, and we'll be talking about all of the hurling because there was a lot that we didn't get to. And a lot of that is because of Cheltenham. Cheltenham was on all week. Joe Nabileeks texted in and he said, now that Cheltenham is over, the focus is back on GA, and he's delighted to see Clare doing well in the hurling, as am I, Joe. And we'll be talking about them on Monday. No doubt. It's time, just before we go though, to announce the winner of our AXA competition. Myra Malloy entered today and made it into our prize draw, along with Martina Ryan, Terry Cassidy, Jennifer Byrne and Siobhan Burke. And the winner of our amazing prize from AXA of 4-match tickets to see Liverpool FC versus Chelsea at the women's home ground, Prenton Park, with hospitality, tickets, hotel accommodation for one night and flights to the value of €2,000 is Monday's entry, Martina Ryan. Congratulations, Martina. That is all we have time for this evening. The official chart show with Blonda Tracy's up next. RTE 2FM.